Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Senator Elizabeth Warren is expected to officially enter the presidential campaign for 2020 tomorrow. She'll be the 8th Democrat to officially announce a campaign. We're going to be talking with all of them if they'll accept our invitation. And today we're joined by John Delaney. He's former Maryland congressman, has been in this race since July of 2017. Welcome to Here and Now.
It's great to be here.
So you were in this race before it was a race. What was the first moment that you remember wanting to run for president?
Well, the first time I thought about it was after Secretary Clinton lost, because, you know, as a Democrat, I wasn't planning on running against her, and I actually thought she was going to win, like I think a lot of the country. And that moment made me say we have to think differently about everything.
What is it that you think that you're going to do differently? Why do you think that we needed to think differently about things after Clinton's loss?
Well, I think we really need to move to a bit of a postpartisan world where we actually start solving problems and stop kind of living in a country where, you know, the political leaders act like half the country is entirely wrong about everything they believe and increasingly try to pit American against American.
Do you think it's possible to do that, though, especially if the other side, let's say that you came in and you became president and you said we're going to live in a postpartisan world and we're all going to be friends with each other, but the other side doesn't want to do that as well. Doesn't it make it impossible to be done?
Well, I'm not saying it's easy, right? And I'm not saying we should want to live in a world where we agree with each other on everything. We absolutely shouldn't want to live in that world. We'd want to have a debate of ideas. And that's the whole point of the political process. But we also have to start spending some of our time focused on the things we agree with each other on, because there's a long list of things where I actually think there's broad agreement in this country that we need to act and do something. But it never gets done because it's not of interest to the extremes on each side, who, in my opinion, have largely held this country hostage for decades.
Let's go through some issues. First of all, health care. You are not in favor of Medicare for All, correct?
That's right. I'm not in favor of the Medicare for All bill that is proposed in the U.S. Senate specifically, right? Because the term Medicare for All sometimes doesn't mean anything, but there is actually a bill that Senator Sanders and a lot of the other people who are running for president have crafted in the Senate. I am not for that bill. I am for a system of universal health care where every American has health care as a fundamental right, because I think that's where we should be as a civilized society.
Through
I think
private insurance or government?
Well, I think the way I would do it is to some extent I'd actually use Medicare as a model. What Medicare does is you get basic health care as a right if you're over 65, and then you have the ability to buy supplemental plans so that you can have choices. So I think we need a system. My proposal is a system very similar to that. I leave Medicare alone. I create a new system for everyone under 65 where they get health care as a right. It's a basic plan. We roll Medicaid into that. But then we allow people to have choices and get private insurance to supplement that basic government plan. That's where I think we should go.
What about immigration? Would you be willing, let's say on this issue of the wall, would you be willing to allow the president to build some more fencing or some wall in order to get the Dreamers a path to citizenship?
Yes. I think there's 1.8 million people who are considered Dreamers. I think they go to bed every night worried about potentially being deported and going back to a country none of them may even know. You know, they came here as kids. They did nothing wrong. And if as part of a smart border security program, we funded some money for the kind of steel barriers that exist now on the border and we could get a deal with Dreamers, how could you not do that? Right. I mean, it's, you know, you're potentially helping 1.8 million human beings. I mean, what we should do on border security to me is pretty obvious. The Congress and the president should agree on a certain amount of money, call it $5 billion. And they should agree that experts will make recommendations as to the best way to spend that money. And it's likely that those experts would say, let's invest in technology here. Let's put some more personnel here. And probably in these places, we need some physical barriers. And the Congress and the president should agree on what the experts recommend.
What about trade? Would you get back into, for example, the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership that President Obama wanted and President Trump didn't?
Yes, I would. I was a big supporter of the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I worked very closely with President Obama on that. I was one of the few Democrats to support it. I thought it was in the economic interest of the country, but in particular, I thought it was in the national security interest of the United States of America. The number one threat from a foreign policy perspective by any measure for our country is China. And, you know, Asia is the fastest growing economic region in the world. And we need to be making commitments to our allies in the Asia-Pacific region that we are there as a partner for them. And it's one of the main ways of dealing with China and what I would consider their pirate-like practices over the last several decades, to be competing with them in their backyard.
You founded two finance companies, and I wonder what you think about the fact that 10 years after the financial crisis and all the new regulations that went into place, that so many of them were taken back. Do you think that Wall Street is adequately regulated right now?
I think the financial system in the United States of America right now is very well capitalized and is safe and largely in a good position to withstand an economic crisis, right, which is the most important thing. Because last time we allowed our banks to be way undercapitalized and they operated with kind of a heads they win, tails the taxpayers lose mentality, and it largely brought down a big part of the U.S. economy. So firstly, and I think most importantly, we have a very strong and well-capitalized financial system in this country. I think regulations on larger financial institutions are largely appropriate, and I fully support the Dodd-Frank regime to regulations. But I do believe we are seeing a rapid decline in the number of community banks in this country. And I think we have to say, you know, we have to decide as a country, do we want to still have these community banks? Because we can't subject them to the same level of regulations that the largest financial institutions have because they just can't afford it. And as a result, they're rapidly kind of being consolidated.
Do you think that Elizabeth Warren is too tough on the banks?
I think she perceives the banks to be a bigger problem right now than they are. In other words, the banks were a much bigger problem going into the financial crisis. I think right now, just to put it into perspective, the risk of automation and artificial intelligence, which is likely to displace 50 million jobs or fundamentally change them by 2030, for example, is a much bigger conversation for us to be having about the economy and jobs, et cetera, in this country than the banks, which are largely pretty well capitalized and have been appropriately regulated since the financial crisis. The next crisis is never the same as the last crisis. So I think walking around and acting like the banks are the big problem in this country is really not the right issue. The right issue is, how is our economy fundamentally changing? How is it disrupting jobs and work? And how is it leading to a tremendous concentration of opportunity in a relatively small number of places in this country? I mean, last year in the United States of America, 80% of the venture capital was invested in 50 counties out of 3,100 counties. So you have this tremendous concentration of opportunity that's based on all these changes, technology, globalization, et cetera. And those are much bigger things to get our head around than what's going on in the banking system.
Some of what a president does has to do with the present moment, and some of it is about the future and,
yep,
and setting, laying the groundwork for the future. We've done a lot of stories on this program about Generation Z, and one of the things that they're dealing with is very high rates of suicide, depression. Many people are looking at how much kids are using devices right now. What do you think is the biggest problem facing the youngest generation in this country?
Well, I think devices is a big issue. I mean, I think we've allowed these technology companies who have real monopoly power to effectively develop devices that are clearly addictive. And we have, you know, no regulation on them largely at all. I sponsored legislation in the Congress to have the NIH do a study on the addictive nature of devices. Mm-hmm. So I think a combination of social media addiction, I think a combination of, you know, very concentrated economic opportunity where about 70-80% of the kids in this country live in a community where the jobs that are being created are not as good as the jobs that used to exist, which has led to fractured families, a large mental health crisis, a public education system that really hasn't been updated to deal with the demands of the world we live in now. I think there's a convergence of all these factors that is creating huge despair in our country in every generation, including, you know, and listen, I have four daughters, right? So I'm, you know, ages 11 to 26. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of am pretty close to these issues, and I think they're a real issue.
I'm going to ask you one more question. We're going to be asking everybody this question, which is, What scares you? Now, it could be something that scares you about the country, but it could also be, you know, spiders. Whatever it is, tell me what scares you, John Delaney.
Well, what scares me is the level of division in our country. I worry that we're going to live in a world where future political disagreements are met with violent protests because we can't have any normal conversations anymore. And people are looking for villains, and typically they're looking for people who are in a different political party. And we haven't done things to control the disinformation wars that can happen in a largely unregulated technology environment that we live in. I worry about a world where people will look at their phones, see something they like, and smile, and the phone will know that, and it'll immediately give them an image of, you know, and the image might be a complete fake scenario where they took someone's face and voice and imposed it in a scene designed to influence what they buy and what or how they vote. And that this really erodes the basic fabric of our society. So I really worry about the deep, deep divisions in our country because I think this is a magnificent country and we can solve every single problem in front of us, but we have to solve them all together. And if we're divided, we can't.
That is John Delaney, a former Maryland congressman. He is running for the Democratic nomination in 2020. John Delaney, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And again, we'll talk to all of the candidates for 2020 if they accept our invitations.